Welcome to the first episode of the Into the Wild podcast, where we will be interviewing outdoor junkies like ourselves about their experiences in nature. We hope to use this platform to continue learning and growing as both individuals and as an organization. We hope that you will accompany us on this journey of understanding the thrill others seek in the outdoors, the incredible memories and learning opportunities that can come from safari experiences, and how the conversations we have can begin to make the outdoors a more just and equitable space for all people. This episode, we will be talking with Carolyn Highland, who is currently a fourth grade outdoor educator and freelance writer based in Tahoe, California. Carolyn was raised in Yarmouth, Maine, and graduated from Northwestern University with a Bachelor's of Arts in Creative Nonfiction Writing. You can find her skiing, trail running, mountain biking, backpacking up in Tahoe. She has written and published over 50 essays in popular outdoor journals, and Into the Wild leaders Noelle, Jules, and myself, Kate, feel so lucky to have had the opportunity to interview her and to learn more about her view of the outdoor industry through a multitude of experiences that have shaped her into becoming the powerful role model that she is today. Cool. Unless you have any questions for us, we would love to just dive right in.
Yeah, let's do it.
Our first question for you, for us, and then also for listeners as well, we wanted to know if you could tell us a little bit about how you became the writer and the teacher, and as we say, like the female powerhouse that you are today from what we've seen and what we've heard from Kate. So just tell us a little bit about your story and how you got to where you are.
Totally. Yeah. So I grew up in the glorious small town of Yarmouth, Maine, and grew up skiing and hiking and just, you know, enjoying the outdoors with my family and at school. And actually, like, by the time I graduated from high school, was like, get me out of here. I need to go somewhere big with lots of people and I'm going to try the city. And so I was in Chicago for college, and then kind of over the course of that time realized, oh, I actually want to be back in the mountains. Like, that was definitely the right environment for me. And so kind of was like a little bit unsure of what to do when I graduated, because everyone I knew was like getting a job in an office and putting on heels. And I was like, this is not my future. So I spent a couple of years after college kind of bopping around, traveling. I taught English in South America, worked in a hut in New Hampshire, did a semester with the National Outdoor Leadership School in New Zealand. And so those experiences kind of put me on the path that I've been on for the last, you know, 10 years, I guess, at this point, and got really psyched about outdoor ed and teaching and being with kids and living in the mountains. So writing started when I was super little. I've been writing since I was like 7, and keeping a journal regularly, and studied creative nonfiction in college and knew that that was what I wanted to do basically forever, but also needed like a day job kind of thing. Like, I wasn't trying to work at a magazine or a newspaper because I don't love the idea of sitting on a computer all day. It's like not really how I'm built. So being a teacher and getting to be moving around and being with people all day and then writing on the side for me has been like a really great balance of those interests and sort of modes that I want to live my life in. It's one of those things where you have this vision in your head of what you want your career to look like, and you don't always get there right away. So I taught in a public school in Denver for 3 years after grad school before I was able to work at the kind of school that I work at now, just kind of getting experience as a teacher, and wrote for free for a long time for online publications and things like that before I was getting paid and getting stuff in print. So I think the road was long in a lot of ways, but those were the things that were always keeping me motivated, was, you know, working with kids and being outside. And I feel super lucky that I've been able to kind of mix it all together, and now being a teacher full-time allows me not only like the human interaction that I like, but also the financial stability to be able to write freelance without being stressed about it. Basically, anything I do is extra at that point. And that feels, for me personally, like a really great way to keep my creativity thriving.
Yeah, stress can kill the creative thoughts that we have.
Yeah, totally.
It shuts us down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So that was a little bit all over the place, but that's, I guess, kind of how I got here. And the most important thing there was being willing to do things that were really different from what everyone else around me was doing. Like, nobody that I went to college with or high school with is really doing anything similar to what I'm doing right now. And so I had to kind of be like, all right, I'm going to just follow this because it feels right to me, and not get caught up in the fact that everyone, you know, when I go to like college reunions is like, what are you talking about? So...
Totally. So you did touch upon this a little bit, but your experience as a teacher is pretty different from normal teacher experiences. Mm-hmm. So I was just wondering if you could talk about exactly what you do, I guess, maybe a day-to-day of what your teaching life looks like.
Totally. I feel super lucky. I work for a school that has like a really awesome vision for a different kind of education than I think most of us got. And then that a lot of kids are still getting, and it's all about sort of experiential and real world applications of learning. And so we lean heavily on field work and meeting with experts to really bring those to life. So last fall, for example, we studied public lands. And so, you know, we went and took a hike on every different kind of public land in the Tahoe Basin. And we did a 3-night overnight to Yosemite National Park and talked to park rangers and talked to the Washoe tribe, which is the local tribe in Tahoe, and then the Paiute up near Yosemite. And we engaged with conservation groups doing conservation work in the area. We talked to developers. We kind of try to get all the different sides of the issue. And so instead of just like reading about something in a book in a classroom, it's way more about building background knowledge in the classroom and then going out and sort of experiencing what those topics look like in real life and involving the kids in being part of the solution, ideally. So the idea, it's not just like, here's a report, mom, you know, but actually getting to engage with authentic audiences and in problems that are actually occurring in the local community. It's super rad to get to do that with kids. They're way more engaged. And I think building a lot of critical thinking and problem solving skills that we didn't necessarily get growing up, because it was kind of just like, do this math problem. And as a teacher, I get to bond with my students in such a more meaningful way, teaching them how to put a tent up and how to like poop in the woods and like all this other stuff that your teacher doesn't normally teach you. And so I have like such close relationships with my kids and with the families, because I think we all get to see each other as more three-dimensional people and not just sort of like somebody in the classroom. So it's awesome.
Totally. Thank you so much for talking about that.
Yeah.
So we read through a bunch of your essays, and in one of them, How Can I Support You? It just really resonated with myself and I think Jules and Noelle both. And so you talked about the power of the expedition behavior and the impact of the simple question of how can I support you or how can I help you has on someone else. And you also mentioned that in the outdoors, we really accomplish anything alone, and in a polarized and divided society that we live in today, how do you think that we can use the concept of expedition behavior to help lead our world in a more just and sustainable and inclusive way?
Woo! That's such a good question. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I mean, I think I love expedition behavior and the concept of it, because I think that so often we're wrapped up in kind of like our own problems and our own realities and our own situation. And what EP asks us to do is thinking about like, I'm going to go fill my water bottle up. Like, who else needs their water bottle filled up? Or like, what can I do to take the load off of somebody else? And I think that so many of our problems in society stem from not thinking about the well-being or not placing the well-being of other people at the forefront.
In your essay, you don't always have to know the answer. You share your experience as a leader during a Knowles trip in the backcountry where you were faced with challenging situations that you didn't really feel prepared for. So how do you think that we can practice being actively vulnerable as leaders at times when we might not know all of the answers, especially in such like a pressure cooker world where people kind of expect us to know everything today?
That's a great question. It's funny when I write things, it's like, I'm learning this lesson and writing this thing. And then like 2 months later, I'm like, I got to learn that one again. Like from myself that I supposedly already learned. So I feel like that one in particular is really tough for me. Like I hate feeling like I don't know what I'm doing, especially if people are looking to me to know what I'm doing. And so I think that the vulnerability piece is huge of being like, I'm not perfect and I'm not going to know everything. And trying to pretend like I know everything is way worse than admitting that I don't know it. Not acknowledging the fact that you don't know what's going on or you don't know what to do is like the kiss of death, because then people are like, you don't know what to do and you're not being authentic. And that's like really easy to pick out. Realizing that that's actually a huge learning opportunity. If you're focused on yourself, you're like embarrassed and stressed and you're like, I'm supposed to know this and I don't, and I'm feeling badly about myself. And if you focus on the learning opportunity and take the focus off of yourself, you're like, oh, this is actually me being vulnerable and me allowing them to participate in the figuring out of what's going on is actually going to serve them. The woman that I wrote about in that essay, who was my instructor at the time, I respected her like 20 times more after that experience than I did initially. there's a freaking thunderstorm coming. Like, that's a real life. Like, we need to figure out how to cross this river. There are going to be actual consequences. And she still was just like, all right, I don't know where to cross. Like, we got to figure this out together. And like, we did. And then it felt like this collective effort, like back to the collective piece of we're working together. And like, one person is probably more experienced than the others, but like, that doesn't mean that everyone can't contribute. So I think it takes humility and practice and putting the focus elsewhere besides your own ego.
Yeah, that's such a great point. I think that we've all definitely been in the position where we might be a little bit nervous, and it's always good to hear that other people also feel that way and that it's not something that is totally foreign to others. But something that you were definitely talking about previously is doing so many things virtually that we haven't been able to do in person, or that we could have done, but maybe can take advantage of a little bit more now. So over the past year, Into the Wild hasn't been able to lead trips, but we've done a lot of reflection about like regarding equity and accessibility of both our organization as well as the greater outdoor community. So you talked a lot about your experience in the People of Color conference in one of your articles. And I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the importance of being an ally, but also the challenges that can come from being in those spaces, like you talked about in that essay, that you're not really meant to be in.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I was like, you're going to have to cut me off on this one, I think, at some point, because I can talk for a long time. But yeah, I mean, I think, where do I even start? The outdoors is, like many other spaces, seen as this like anyone can go outside, right? But actually there's all these really hidden barriers that for many of us who haven't necessarily personally experienced them aren't always obvious. And I think like the one that I've experienced the most obviously as a female and experiencing sexism in the outdoors, which happens all the time, as I'm sure you all know, that's the one I have personal experience with. And so for me, that one's easy to recognize. And then what I've been trying to do is for other intersections of identity that I'm not at, that others are, that are also affecting their experiences outside, like trying to be more aware of those. And I do that by listening a lot, making sure I'm following people on social media or reading articles by people who have, you know, different identities than I do, so that I'm making sure that I'm not just missing what others are experiencing by not experiencing it personally. You know, I live in a small mountain town in California, definitely not super diverse. There's a lot of people here who would prefer to just not really talk about this stuff and be like, I just want to ski and not talk about it. And I feel like personally responsible for like disrupting that narrative here, especially working with children who could very easily grow up never having these conversations. And like, Kate, I don't know what your experience was, but like growing up in Maine, like we never talked about it at my house. Yeah. And we didn't really talk about it at school. And it was kind of just love everybody and everybody's the same and it's fine. Right. And we all know that like at this point that that's not actually what's happening. And so I think being willing to interrupt those narratives and start uncomfortable conversations and have people leverage their privilege in a way that's necessary for any change to happen, starting it at a really young age. Like I've had a ton of success talking to 9 and 10 year olds about identity and racism and sexism and all the isms. And like, they actually can handle it honestly better than most adults. That's the thing, is because they're young enough to not have fully had these paradigms like solidified in their head. And so I think getting to them at a young age and, you know, talking about it in a developmentally appropriate way is super important. And then it's been really cool to watch how they've then gone out into the world and kind of like started noticing things that they weren't noticing before. And I think that it's so crucial to do that in predominantly white spaces on the race side of things, and, you know, predominantly able-bodied spaces and neurotypical spaces, because if we're not doing it actively, it's not going to happen in those areas. You have to be willing to interrupt and call people out and be uncomfortable and do a lot of learning and reading and informing yourself too, to be able to have those conversations. But I think it's so critical. And I would love to see a world as soon as possible where everybody feels comfortable being in the outdoors and where the narrative isn't just rich white people recreating, because it's just bullshit, frankly. So I could talk for a lot longer, but that feels like a good place to pause. No,
that's great. And as Kate mentioned, I mean, what we've been doing as a club, as she discussed, for the past year, just having more recognition than we have had of course, so many positives about the outdoor industry that we all seen, but also the negatives behind it too. Mm-hmm. And the main reason we really want to start this podcast and want to focus on it is to talk to people like you who are really passionate about the outdoors and love the outdoors, but also can recognize the fact that there are issues with safety and gender equality and race inequity and inequity in so many, like you talked about able-bodied, like ableism is something that's totally a thing that is not discussed.
Exactly. And I was also just wondering, because I know that you were talking a little bit about the conversations that you've had with a lot of your students about just allyship in general and having these really difficult conversations with them and kind of encouraging them to dig deep inside themselves. And I was wondering how their reactions are something that we can all model because they are younger and haven't adapted these internal or inherent biases.
And it's so funny how it's actually so simple. Let people be who they are and care about other people's well-being. All it is at the bottom of it. And so the fact that it's so complicated and so triggering for adults is actually kind of mind-blowing, because you're like, when you tell this to a 9-year-old, they're like, oh yeah, like if a person wants to identify as a different gender than the sex they were born at, that sounds like it makes sense to me. Why wouldn't they be allowed to do that? Or, you know, we should be treating everybody with respect and dignity and giving the same opportunities to everybody, regardless of any part of their identity. It's not actually that complicated. And so I think when you explain it in these really basic terms, as like a white person who grew up with privilege, they're not having to wrestle with the same guilt and shame and, oh my God, I've been participating in this for my whole life and I didn't realize it and I feel terrible and like I thought I was doing an okay job and it turns out I wasn't. They're not having to go through that. And so I think that is what blocks so many people from showing up in the way that they need to and from doing this work. And kids don't have as much of that to wade through, which is why I think it's so crucial that it's addressed at a young age. Imagine a world where nobody tells anybody, like every family has a mom and a dad. Like what if it was just there are adults in families and there are kids in families and sometimes there's dogs and sometimes there's, you know, men and women and other genders, then it wouldn't be this weird thing that they have to like undo. It's just, that's just part of the menu of options that are possible. And they see it on this really basic level that I believe it actually is on, and they care. There was this post on Instagram that I feel like I copied and sent to people in so many situations, but I don't know how to explain to you that you should care about other people. Yes, like it's literally that simple. Like let people be who they are and treat everyone with kindness and respect. I think that maybe what we need to do is inhabit a little bit more of our kid brain when we're dealing with some of this and have humility too, like, all the time, right? Like I'm somebody who is really interested in this work and I spent a lot of time on this work and I'm still actively breaking down a ton of problematic stuff in my own head. And frequently will catch myself and being like, that was a racist thought. That was a sexist thought. Like that was like influenced by the patriarchy. That was influenced by white supremacy. And I feel like having that, the humility to be like, I'm not perfect and I'm participating in this, even as I'm trying to not participate in it, is so crucial. Because if you're like, I'm not part of the problem, or I don't want to think about how I'm contributing to this, then you're just continuing the cycle.
That's such a powerful way to put it. And I think that you hit the nail on the head by saying that we definitely did grow up in a society where everyone just wanted to be peaceful and not really talk about it and not get into those uncomfortable conversations. And I applaud you for doing that work. And it's been really inspiring for me as someone who grew up always looking up to you and seeing everything that you're doing within the outdoor community, the California community, as well as the community of women that I really look up to. It's made an amazing impact on my life and definitely challenged me to have these really hard conversations, not only with myself, but as well as the people that I surround myself with, and to continue to like challenge these notions and the inherent biases that I have. So thank you.
Thank you. I have to show you my face because I'm like, oh, that's so nice. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah,
and going back, like what you were saying, like, it's just so admirable that like even you doing all this work and doing all this reading and learning, like still acknowledge that there are so many microaggressions that are happening and like you are not perfect. And going back to your essay, like you don't always have to know the answer. So I think that, yeah, that was really admirable.
And you touched on one thing I want to touch on in your last answer is you talked about the commonality of sexism in the outdoors. As a female, have you ever found yourself faced with issues of gender inequity in the outdoors? And as I could tell from your last answer, the answer is going to be yes. And I think it could be for all of us. And I read your article last night, Know Before You Go. And it was really powerful to me how in your writing, it was always like, we were there, so I was okay. Or he was there, so I was okay. And you ended your article then with, I was there, so I was okay. So how has that growth process been within your own brain of having that paradigm shifted? I can learn this and I can do this on my own and it's okay. And I'm going to contradict the commonality of sexism in the outdoors. And what has that looked like for you? And what have you experienced in that process?
Oh my goodness. Like I said, this is like one of my favorite topics to just get on a soapbox
about.
That's
great.
Ready.
Get on the box.
Yeah, we're ready for it.
But yeah, I mean, I feel like, so I guess beginning with that essay and then I'll branch out from there, you know, the trope of like the guy who gets his female partner into a sport is just makes me want to vomit. I love nothing more than ladies mentoring ladies and just being like, I'm going to learn how to mountain bike from my friend who's rad at mountain biking, and not because her boyfriend made her do it, but because she's super psyched about mountain biking. And so I had backcountry skied. I got into it via my dad in Maine, which is obviously a very different level of risk than bigger mountains in the West. And so when I moved to Colorado for grad school, I was dating the guy in that essay, and he was a snow scientist. And so like a super expert in this field. And so I got into a lot of what I was doing with him and was kind of like, well, he knows everything and I don't need to deal with this myself. Obviously, then we broke up and I was dead set on, I am going to ski with women who are not my romantic partners, so that like, if I have a breakup, it's not like, now I just lost my partner and my ski partner and like everything's terrible. I was like, I want to ski with my friends and I want to feel like I own this. Like, this is my knowledge and my sport that means something to me and isn't something that has to do with any relationship that I'm in or not in. And so from there, you know, I skied quite a bit, obviously growing up, and then not as much in college because I was in the Midwest, and then kind of came back to it after college. And now skiing is like a central part of my life and is a huge focus in my writing. So that spurred this drive in me to like really take ownership of skiing. And I was like, I want to ski because I want to ski, not to impress anybody, not to keep up with anybody, but because it's something that brings me joy and that makes me feel like myself. And so having skiing, which feels like something that's like really central to my identity at this point in my life, be mine, feels really important. And so I guess that's the answer to that piece. I think sexism, oh boy, so often, I don't even know where to start. I feel like women are just taken less seriously as athletes. And it feels like people assume that I like know less about gear, or that I am less experienced in managing avalanche terrain, or are surprised if I'm a strong skier. And I grew up in Maine skiing on sheet ice. So for that, I'm like, I can hang. It's fine. It just feels super frustrating to not be taken at the value of, I've been backcountry skiing for almost 10 years. So I have all this knowledge and experience. And when people run into me who don't know me, they just make assumptions about how much experience I have based on the fact that I'm a female. And that just feels really frustrating. I'm not here because I'm trying to keep up with a guy, and I'm not newly here. Like, this is something that I spend a lot of time focusing on and putting energy into. And so to feel like assumptions are being made all the time is super irritating. And there have been so many times where like it then gets creepy, right? I'm out running in the mountains, or I'm skiing or whatever it is, and people are just like creepy and weird to you. And you're like, I'm just trying to do something that's enjoyable to me. This isn't about you. This isn't about what you think of what I'm doing. It's about me trying to live my life. And then people have comments to make. I would love to see an outdoors where people are looked at for the amount of, I don't want to say where gender doesn't matter, because like that's then erasing people's like struggles and experiences, but where my gender doesn't play into how seriously I'm taken. I would also like to see males standing up for their female friends and their female partners when that happens, and not like leaving that to the woman to do. It's like, because then you have to like experience it and then deal with it. And it's really nice if you have allies who are willing to kind of step in for you in those situations. Also to be appreciated. I think that there's also this whole thing. Guys are then intimidated by women who are strong at a sport or knowledgeable about a sport, and they like can't handle it. And then they start acting like an idiot because they're like insecure and embarrassed that somebody is like able to keep up or hang or whatever. And so So I'd love to see like a little bit less of that as well. I ski with mostly women, and the few guys who I ski with are awesome about that and are like psyched when there's a woman who is a great ski partner and they're not surprised or intimidated or freaked out or whatever and take my opinion seriously. And those are the type of guys that I want to ski with, and like other guys I just have no time for. So
you mentioned the importance of allyship and like seeing males and also females, like females yeah. also around you, sticking up for when you see somebody facing sexism or being sexualized in an outdoor setting or any yes. setting. But yep. since we're talking about the outdoor setting right now, I, not to sound like a stalker, but I saw your Instagram story this morning.
You're good.
That woman who was trying to hike and post a photo of her and her dog. Yep. And she didn't have a bra on, which Kate and Jules and I were talking about this morning. I wouldn't have even noticed if there hadn't have been all of those right. comments yeah. about people yep. sexualizing her when she was just trying to be in the outdoors. And frankly, no one gives a shit if she's not wearing a bra.
Right.
It was brought up. And I think that that just has a lot to do with, you know, sexualization in this setting that has infiltrated itself into the outdoors and most definitely exists there.
Right.
And identifying that and combating it is something that we definitely want to do ourselves, but also as a club, being a outdoors club at a university.
Totally. Totally. It feels like objectification of women still occurs in so many. And like that woman is a pro skier. She's an incredibly badass athlete. She's skied Everest, is an unbelievable human being. And all these creepy dudes can focus on is her nipples. And it's, come on. It's just, to me, it demeans who women are as like full people. Also not getting to choose when you feel sexualized and when you don't. I would like to get to decide when that's how somebody's looking at me or not. And so often women aren't given that choice, right? Like those guys are looking at her in that way, even though she's posting something about her dog. And it's like not supposed to be about her body at all. And somehow it becomes about her body. And so I really resent the fact that, you know, we don't have the choice of when that comes into play. And I've had so many situations where I'm like aware of what I look like in a way that I don't want to be. I got a flat tire in Utah on the side of the road once, and I was wearing leggings and a fleece dress. And I literally like went into the back of my car and I put my Carhartt overalls on because I want to like hide what my body looks like in this interaction because I don't want it to factor in and freak me out, you know? And so to have to think about that kind of stuff is so frustrating when you're like, I'm just trying to get a flat tire fixed and I shouldn't have to think about if my pants are too tight. I think something, again, that so many males just don't understand, what frustrates me the most and what I like sarcastically captioned that picture in my story was like, so many times guys will be like, I don't know, like they probably would have said that to anybody, or like, are you sure that was about gender? Yes. Yes, I'm sure. You have to trust me. And I think that's something that's so important as an ally or an accomplice is like, if a woman says it's about gender, it's about gender. If a person of color says it's about race, it's about race. You don't get to argue. You don't get to decide. You just get to listen. That, I think, is what people need to do more of. Having to be gaslit, you know, to explain your situation when you already had to go through it and then you have to justify it. And then in your head, you're like, am I making this up? That's a next level of hell.
That was a really powerful way of putting it. I think that that post really resonated with all of us.
So switching directions a little bit, what is an experience that you've had, whether it's gender inequality or a time where you were faced with something where you didn't feel prepared, that you're really grateful for now that you never really thought you would have been in the moment?
Oh my gosh. It feels like all the most important experiences are that, you know, it's the classic type 2 fun area where you're just like, wow, this is really terrible when it's happening. And then you realize like, actually that was totally for the best. Like, I like seek those out in almost everything I do, because I like to do really hard, suffery things for unknown reasons. Like skiing really set me up well for that. I think that, so there's an essay in my book. It's in this essay called Or, and I did this 40-mile backcountry ski race in Colorado from Crested Butte to Aspen a couple years ago with one of my good friends, and had trained for months and spent a bunch of money and put a ton of time in and destroyed my feet, all the things, and was, you know, super excited to do this big thing. And my partner in the middle of the race had a massive asthma attack and had to be evacuated, basically. And so prior to her being able to be evacuated, I had to tow her for 5 miles up 2 passes, with a bungee cord. Luckily, she's like 4'11 and weighs 100 pounds. So of any of my friends that I had to do this for, she was definitely the ideal one. But so in that moment, I was obviously worried about her because we were at 12,000 feet and she's having a severe asthma attack and I have to get her to the place where they can get a snowmobile in to rescue her. So it was just scary and a lot of pressure. And then also like wrestle with this disappointment of not, of knowing I wasn't going to finish the race and knowing that this thing that we had prepared for and trained for wasn't going to happen in the way I wanted it to. And I felt strong and fine and like ready to continue. And so I had this, you know, basically decision in front of me of, am I going to be an asshole about this and like be resentful towards her and be grumpy about the fact that this didn't go the way I wanted to, or am I going to like show up as a first responder? And am I going to show up as a good friend and kind of just low with what's happening and not resist what is, you know, and ended up somehow deciding for door number two. And it ended up being this thing where I was like, I learned so much more and got such a better story. My friend was fine, by the way. Obviously, that's an important piece of this, but
I love to hear that.
Yeah. I learned so much more and I had to go through so much more with it happening that way than if it had just been a race that went normally and was really difficult physically. And that's something that comes back to me all the time now of having this choice of, am I going to be the better version of myself right now or not? And we always have that choice. And that was the lesson that that experience taught me, even though it was like 100% not what I was envisioning. I learned way more from it. It's impacted my life in a more long-lasting way than it would have if we had just done the race and nothing had happened. So I'm all about the Sufferfest.
Sufferfest. You always learn the most from things when they end up taking turns that you don't expect them to.
And for sure.
I think that sounds like a definitely quite the learning experience. That's a moment where you get into that position. You're like, I know what my decision is going to be, but it's having that internal battle of yourself of like, oh, why am I like wishing that this didn't happen? Because this is the most important thing in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
So your book that you wrote, which I really want to read, but from what I've read in your essays and what I read about the description of the book, I can see that it really is, it's your way of saying what the wilderness and what nature can teach us about the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
So we were going to ask you, and I think that this might be really difficult. So if you had to sum it all up into one word, what do you truly think the wilderness teaches us about life's experience, whether that word is good or bad?
One word. I guess the one word that I would choose is connection for many reasons and many like meanings of that word. But I think that to me, what the book does is it connects an idea that we could find in an outdoor experience with another part of our life. So like in the example I just gave, connecting what happened in this ski race, how does that show up in other areas of our life that have nothing to do with the outdoors and have nothing to do with skiing? And just the connection between the lessons that we learn there and how we can bring those into other areas of our life. That's what I love doing. What I do in my writing is also what I do with my students. So it's connected to my work in that way, how everything is so related to everything else. And if you're looking and paying attention, you can be seeing symbolism and learning things that can relate to any area of your life at any moment. And I think the outdoors is particularly full of that just because you're in these situations where you're so in the moment all the time and you're having to learn things and come up against things that are difficult and how those can then be connected to the rest of your life. And you can use them as like a way to understand things that may at first glance seem unrelated, but are actually really connected. That was such a cool question. I feel like I want to like write that down and be like, yeah, I didn't even like know that about it until you just asked me. And I was like, oh my God, that's so true.
It's crazy because it's normally, I mean, I think something that we talk about as leaders of Into the Wild, I have had it's had such an impact on my life, what I have felt and what I have been able to reflect on and realize when I was in the outdoors. So I want to help other people do that and have other people have that experience. Mm-hmm. And I like the word connectedness that you use because I had never put that together, but it makes sense that whatever is going on in your life, good or bad, anytime you go out in the outdoors, you think about that and you reflect on that either positive or kind of difficult experience that you're going through at that moment. So whenever you're in the outdoors, I feel like personally, and from what I've heard from anybody I've talked to about it, you're always connecting the two things. And I think that that's a super important thing that we can take with us and we can learn from.
Totally.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think what I originally thought you were going to say actually was like human connection and the connection between other people, which is something that I really appreciate about being outdoors and something that I've always like one of the reasons why I love going into outdoor spaces with other people is to enhance those connections. But I think that that is so much more profound and something that I didn't even realize until you said it. The fact that there are so many things that we take, I think, for granted in my own life that I've learned from outdoor experiences, like pushing myself past limits that I didn't even know existed. And I learned that in middle school, like during cross country ski meets that I didn't like want to compete.
That Kate was like, I don't want to do this.
That has made me realize that there are so many places in my life that I wouldn't have been able to do without these experiences. And I think that that's a big reason why all of us, including you, Carolyn, like want to expand the accessibility to the outdoors and to make people realize how incredible these spaces are that we love to play in.
Yeah. And I think like, that's why the word I picked it. Cause it was like, it's that, it's what you just said. I feel always connected to myself even more when I'm out there and connected to, you know, nature and something bigger. And I think it's all of those things at once. And that's why we keep going back for more, even if it's like wet and cold and uncomfortable and we're tired, you know, is because like we're getting something out of it that's bigger than that. And that's why we're willing to put up with kind of the like human level discomfort to get it.
Of course.
There's so much we can learn too from nature, and just, it's so humbling to be in nature and experience, reestablish that human nature connection.
Thank you so much for coming and talking to us. I absolutely loved getting to catch up with you.
What you're doing is rad, and I support it.
Thank you all for listening. We can't wait to continue bringing you more content. Stay tuned for our next episode that will be announced in our weekly emails. Until then, get up, get out, and get wild.